Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, May 11th, 2014. This is episode 1082. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Hover.com. Hover's the best way to buy and manage domain names. It's simple, honest, easy to use. For 10% off your first purchase, go to Hover.com and enter the promo code TTG5. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Apple or Android device is worth at Gazelle.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, GPS devices, no. Palm Pilots, well, no. Just digital photography, sure. Cell phones, probably the biggest subject, right? Yeah. Heather Hammond, the phone ranger, is here on this Mother's Day. Is your mom? Did you talk? Did you dine? Did you do something for mama? Later.
We're holding off until later. Yeah, later. So I walked in with bags of groceries.
Oh, so right. You're going to bring her a meal and
we
make
have
it?
Feast.
Oh, that's so cute. See, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's a nice thing to do.
Yeah, we always have a good
yeah.
time.
I wish all the mothers listening. I know sometimes people say, oh, that's a Hallmark holiday. It's not a real holiday. It's made up by the greeting card. Who cares? Mothers should be honored, don't you think? That's
sure.
A hard job. Neither one of us is a mother. Well, I'm kind of a mother, but that's another.
I'm celebrating Unmother's Day.
Yeah, Unmother's Day. I went last night, as you know, to see a really good Michael Jackson tribute band. Those words don't seem to usually go together. Really good tribute band. They don't usually, but they were really good. Foreverland, and they said all the mothers and there were a lot of mothers in the audience.
Fun.
I think it was like a Mother's Day show. Yeah, it was fun. Well, some mothers like Michael Jackson.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, the whole family. I mean,
it's a family event.
Yeah.
Everybody loves Mikey.
Yeah.
And they did. Except for the encore. So they end the show with Thriller and Man in the Mirror, two very good Michael Jackson
beautiful.
Songs. And then they leave the stage, and we all light our lighters. And actually, you can't anymore. But you know, hold up our cell phones. You know, they have cell phone apps with cigarette lighters on them, so you could hold that up.
Zippo app, first app I
Zippo
ever
app.
Got.
You're kidding.
Not at all.
It's kind of funny. You
it was
hold
the only
that
one
up.
I thought was useful.
Well, yeah, actually, it's kind of smart. So everybody's holding up their Zippo app, I guess. You're going to get your Zippo app. You know, whenever I do anything really exceptional, I want you to fire up the Zippo app.
Oh, I've been lagging on that.
Is it from Zippo? Like it's Zippo
it really
brand?
Is. Yeah, and then you can customize it and get
smart
your
marketing.
Name on it.
Anyway, so everybody's holding up their Zippos. The band has left the stage. You came back to do the encore. What would you do as an encore for a Michael Jackson tribute band? You've done all. You've done Beat It. You've done Eat It. You've done Thriller. You've done Diller. You've done all the songs. There's only one song left. It was not, but I guess it got us out the door. Ease On Down the Road from The Wiz. Maybe it's a Michael Jackson song. He performed
right,
it.
Right, right.
But I think that was their way of saying, go on. Kidaddy. Kidaddle.
We've got mothers, too.
I was ready to jump up and dance, but no. Anyway. A, B, C, 1, 2, 3. They did
the
that.
The Jackson 5 stuff's great, yeah.
Yeah.
Stop the love you save me. Be
yeah, they
own.
Did that. Yeah, yeah. I loved all that stuff. So, but that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here, but I just wanted to say Happy Mother's Day. I don't know how I got into that long digression. The internet has helped us. Oh, look, she's got her Zippo.
There it is.
I feel like I should do an encore. Hey, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, smartphones, Zippo lighter apps. So when you flick it, it opens.
It really acts like one. It's supposed to make that clicking sound.
Does it make that sound?
Yeah. Stunk at that. Anyway.
So the internet has helped with Mother's Day, for instance. Friday afternoon, I'm sitting in the hair salon getting my hair cut. And, you know, my hair cutter is a very, is kind of my gift guide. Once a month I go in there and say, I don't have a gift. And I said, oh my God, it's Mother's Day Sunday. What do I do? I said, Candace, what do I do? And she said, ProFlowers, you get, I actually, while I was getting my hair cut, I went online, ordered mom tulips. She got them yesterday.
Oh, nice.
She doesn't know that I got the twofer. There's something coming Monday. But I was too cheap to order Sunday delivery because it's like an extra $15. So like, Saturday and Monday. That's good. You know, it's bookending at Mother's Day.
Right.
Yeah. 88. You know what would be a good gift for mom?
What?
A new smartphone. That'd be good. A tablet would be nice. Moms like tablets. One of the things I have come around on a little bit, I was a little skeptical about Chromebooks when they first came out. In fact, I remember actually debating the man in charge, Sundar Pichai at Google. I felt a little guilty about this, but I say, Sundar, why would anybody want this? And he said, well, this is going to be huge in business and schools. It's going to be huge. I said, Sundar, it's a browser. You're basically saying take a multi-purpose, multi-function machine, the computer that has changed the world, and turn it into a browser. He said, oh, no, people want this. You'll see. And I was right for the first maybe year. But boy, has it taken off. And now I'm actually recommending them, and I'll tell you why. Yes, it's an inexpensive computer running Linux. You don't have to know any of that. Yes, it's just a browser, although the browser has become more and more capable, and a lot of extensions give it, you know, the capabilities of practically of a desktop computer, with a few exceptions. It's not ideal for photo editing or video editing, although you can do both. But it's great for what mostly people do with a computer. Email, especially if you use Gmail. But you could use other web-based email programs. But, you know, it's particularly good with Google stuff, of course. It's from Google. It's very good for browsing the web because it's a browser. Imagine that. And it doesn't, it's much more secure. It doesn't have any of the problems. Increasingly, I hear from people running Windows machines, and I just feel for them. It's not just Windows XP. It's Windows 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Whatever version of Windows you're running, they, you know, you download something from a seemingly responsible company like CBS Interactive. You've heard those letters, CBS, Columbia. They own CNET, which owns download.com. So this would be reliable, robust. No. You download a file from them, they've wrapped it in something that installs junk on your computer. Conduit is the most notorious. It's not exactly a virus, but it's not exactly nice. Takes over your computer, changes its behavior, changes your homepage, your search page, starts popping up ads in places they shouldn't. Will even pop up ads on other people's websites where other ads might exist, take them over. This is coming to you from CBS Interactive. Unbelievable. Don't they have enough money? They got to make money on my back? Now, it doesn't happen on a Mac. Doesn't happen on a Chromebook. Doesn't happen on an iPad. Doesn't happen on any tablets. It happens only on Windows. I don't blame Microsoft. I think early on, Microsoft probably didn't pay much attention to security. Most of us didn't because we didn't think it was an issue. Once the bad guys appeared, Microsoft got very serious. They do a good job of protecting you. Nevertheless, they can't stop you from downloading something and installing it. And that's what you're doing at download.com. And I hear from people all the time. We had a call. We spent a lot of time, engineering time, from a listener who said, every time I go to the Tech Guy Lab site, when I click on the episodes page, I get a pop-up trying to get me to download malware. He says, your page is infected. I freaked out. I went to our engineers. Is our page? No, our page isn't infected. He's infected. And he probably got it at a download site, and it pops up. Because, of course, they want to load your system up with advertising. They make money on it. And I'm starting to feel for people who are still trying to use Windows. There isn't really any compelling reason to use Windows. I know that was the thing. Everybody in the 80s and the 90s, that's what you did. You used Windows. At work, you use Windows. That's fine. If there's an IT department, go ahead. Be my guest. If there's somebody protecting you who can help you, who you can call and who can come over, fine. But if you're trying on your own to run Windows, and we hear it all the time on this show, we'll hear it today. And suffering. And I feel it for, I can't, there's nothing I could do to fix it from here. I have to tell people, oh, go find a local expert. good luck with that. You shouldn't be using Windows if you could possibly help it. A Mac is a good choice. I know they're expensive, although they've dropped the price of the least expensive Mac to $899. But then try a Chromebook. For most people, a tablet like the iPad or a Chromebook is a great choice. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's talk right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Happy Mother's Day. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my phone number. If you want to call and ask a question or make a suggestion, give me a recommendation, give me a hard time, that's fine. 8888 Ask Leo. Heather, you don't. If somebody says I want to give Leo a hard time, you don't discriminate against them, do you?
I say you can't do that.
You say you could give Leo a hard time.
I say have at it.
Have at him. He could take it. That's what I. Give me a hard time. See, people say, oh, no, everybody's so nice to Leo. You should get somebody on who hates him, like me. Call.
It makes for a much more exciting show.
Yeah, I don't want people saying, oh, Leo, I love you. I don't want. Call up and say, Leo, you're a jerk.
Yeah, here's
why. But make a good argument because I'll decimate you otherwise.
And I'll put you through. I'll put you to the head of the class.
8888 Ask Leo. 888-275-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Or Canada. We do this show some stations don't take us live. That's fine. We're thrilled that they take us at all. But if you're listening, we are live from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on Saturday and Sunday. So if you want to call during those times, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern time, Saturday and Sunday. The website is techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. And you know what's great about that? It's and I say this with all due humility, it's free. You don't have to subscribe. You can get audio and video of previous shows there. That we put them up on YouTube. You can download them. No restrictions. We put all the show notes up there. So as I'm talking, James DeRuvo and Josh Windisch, they copy down my immortal pearls of wisdom. They put them on there. Then after the show, that Josh ties it into the YouTube video, so you can actually watch right from that point. Hear my comments, and then comment on it. And people have been doing that, and that's wonderful. You can vote comments up and down. So you could say, that guy's wrong, or that guy's right. That's a good answer. Better than Leo. That's great. The idea is this website, free and open to all, even if you don't listen to the show, will be a valuable resource where you can get questions answered and stuff like that. TechGuyLabs.com. Now, Heather, this is not a show if it's just me gassing on. As we found out once when the phone lines died, painful hour. Let us, she's laughing.
That's how we know we rely on you, callers.
It's the worst nightmare any talk show host can have.
Oh, I have literal nightmares about stuff like that. Dead air.
Oh, yeah. Everybody who works in radio has the radio nightmare.
Yeah.
What mine was always that I got tangled, because I started radio as a DJ, I'd get tangled up in the headphones.
Oh, really?
And the song's running out. All the songs are 4 seconds long. The songs are running out. I can't find the next song. It's not queued up. It's not ready. Mm-hmm. Just horrible. And those actually happen. How about you? What is your radio?
It's similar, but I didn't get tangled up at all. It's just like, oh no, the song's
ending.
I can't.
That is the radio nightmare. Is the song is ending?
Yeah, I can't get across the room and get the next new elements. And where is everything? And I can't find it. And
you're late for your shift. I actually had that dream last night.
Really? That's why you were here so early.
It was almost 11. It was like I thought it was 5 to 11. And I know I can't remember what I was doing, and I was running. I thought I'm going to be late. Maybe Nathan will run a rerun. This was the last night. How many years have I been doing this? Since 1976. You'd think I'd be a little more comfortable. No. Anyway,
the brain plays tricks on us.
The worst nightmare, which I don't usually have, is that the phones are gone or nobody calls. The worst thing is the phones work fine and nobody calls. that's actually the
one
worst.
One of these days.
One of these days. Hey. Oh. Perish the thought. Sorry. Fortunately, computer troubles just never end. We have yet to have an empty board.
Exactly.
There are plenty of people with problems. Who should I talk to first?
Well, let's do talk about this because it is a problem.
All right.
This is his own personal nightmare. Andrew in L.A.
All right. Andrew in L.A., Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi. Thank you, Heather.
What a pleasure to get a hold of you. Thank you, Leo.
My pleasure to talk to you, as I told you.
iPad, like you say, is an amazing tool. A couple of years ago, I was going to go do some lighting stuff, and the consultant I'm meeting with says, so you got your computer and you got your iPad because you'll need it, right?
Yeah.
And I knew the answer, so I went right on down and bought one.
Are you a gaffer?
What's that?
A lighting guy?
No, not that. I do custom lighting controls.
Neat. Yeah, I've seen many times people use iPads. They used to use computers, but now can use iPads to control lights.
Well, we still use a computer, but the good thing is I can remote desktop to my computer, and I don't have to carry the computer around through the building.
What a nice idea.
It's
I didn't
a
even
pleasure.
Think of that. That's
I've
great.
I've got a couple of questions. First of all, just some information to help everybody. Yes, we can run Flash on the iPad.
How do you do that? By remote desktop.
No, go get the browser called Puffin.
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 All right.
And they run the Flash on their servers and feed it back to you.
Yeah. Skyfire does that, too. There are a number of browsers that do that.
And it's great. So here's my big deal.
I'll be honest with you. I wish they'd kill Flash dead, but okay, go ahead. You got to use it, so.
Yeah, I do, too, because you can't resize it. You can't.
No, it's terrible. It's not good for accessibility. But so many sites use it that, yeah, I understand. Sometimes you need to.
Well, here's my phone call. The basic, you've got a big mouth and whole country hears you.
I do have a big mouth.
And that's a compliment. So for accessibility, when I use my iPad and I'm responding and I pop up a help window on eBay or I go to the App Store, it pops up a little tiny square window in the middle. And you lose the entire real estate. It's only using a third of the screen.
So annoying, isn't it?
I have commented to Apple on forums, on quotes, on chats. Nobody gives a crap.
So what is it exactly that's popping up? Is it an Apple thing?
When you go to the App Store and you tap on any given app, it only shows up in the middle.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, because then you can. So you got to understand, Apple is treating the iPad as scarce, very small. It is scarce real estate, very small. And they want you to be able to use it with your fat little fingers. So they've got to make stuff big so you could tap it.
Right. But
in some ways, to me, the worst thing they could do is make it small and I can't quite hit that X.
Oh, that's not the worst thing they could do. There are two more things.
Yes.
One is, they can hide the scroll bars until you're actually using them.
Yeah, that's the new thing, yeah.
But fortunately, on the new OS X, whatever, you can use it, but you can fix
that.
You
could turn it back on, that's right.
Right, but not on the iPad. I'm on iOS 6 on my iPad, 5 on my phone, and I'm happy not to have screwed up maps or screwed up operating systems.
You've been through the new accessibility settings in iOS 7, right?
Of course, I use the Zoom all the time. So this little box comes up in the middle.
Yeah.
And the first thing I do is I zoom it so I can read it.
But I admit it's not perfect, but I got to say, Apple, more than almost any other company, early on paid a lot of attention to accessibility and does, I mean, I would say the best job of any of these devices.
They did.
It's not perfect, I understand.
But here's the worst part of the whole accessibility thing.
Yeah.
They still continue to use gray type on a white background, or light gray or light blue.
Yeah, and you know, on desktops, you can often set a high contrast mode,
right?
Which to those people who don't have issues looks horrible, but people who have trouble seeing, it's great because it's, you know, something yellow on black or white on black, and
I don't want to change the whole operating system just to make one app work so I can read the darn thing.
I mean, they do have reduced transparency, darker colors, reduced white point, but they don't have that thing that Windows has, and I even make, maybe the Mac has the high contrast mode for people with low vision. You know, I bet you, let me see if I can find it, that Apple has a place to write for this stuff because they want to get accessibility right. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, I'll let you know. Let me find it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. I'm just looking. You know, Apple has a great accessibility page for iOS, apple.com/accessibility/iOS. And they do have a resources tab there, which you can click. And there's a discussion list. There's a lot of places where you could go. And, if you want to improve accessibility, Apple wants to hear from you. Particularly if you have a disability that's maybe unusual or they're not responding to, this is a great opportunity. So if you go to, again, apple.com/accessibility, click the resources button, and they have communities you can participate in. There's a discussion list. There's a podcast, audio and PDF on how people with disabilities can use OS X. But they also have an email address. Apple welcomes comments and inquiries about the accessibility of our products. The email is accessibility@apple.com. And my experience with both Apple and Microsoft is that they are very interested in hearing from you and very responsive. Android's a different matter a little bit because it's so fragmented. You know, Android is made by, it's an open source project Google acquired. It's still open source, some of it. Google does some of it. Some companies use Google services, some don't. It's very fragmented, but I'm sure you can email Google as well. Because all these companies understand that this is, first of all, very important and the right thing to do, but in some cases also their legal obligation due to the ADA. So accessibility at apple.com. That's the way to respond to, you know, just don't call me. I mean, you can, and we can talk about it, but really go to the source. 8888, Ask Leo. Joe's in Tampa, Florida, our next caller. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Leo. This question is about the Obi Hi and the Google
yeah.
voice there. I have
one
of their phones, and they just sent me an email here saying that the XMPP server will no longer support third-party traffic as of the 15th of this month.
4 days. And I have an Obi Hi, and let me just tell people what it is, because I recommended it for a long time. It's great. It was an inexpensive little plug that you could connect to the internet at home and connect a regular phone to, and suddenly you've got internet phone service. One of the ways, one and only one of the ways, there are other ways that you could use it, was with Google Voice, and you could use it for free. But it was a hack. The way they were doing it was, I don't remember setting it up, but you had to kind of give them access to Google Chat. And they were using Google Chat. In fact, if you look at your voice settings, chat became one of the phones. Now, the problem is Google discontinued chat. They replaced it with Hangouts some time ago. And they announced that as of May 15th, they're going to take the server down. It's what's called an XMPP server, as you said. I was disappointed by that choice. I think XMPP is a great open standard that can be very flexible and really great. But again, Obi Hi was sitting on top of a Google service in a way that was a hack. It wasn't, you know, never guaranteed to be supported. So what do you do is the question. And Obi Hi has alternative ways you can do this. I don't know if any of them are free. That was the beauty of Google Voice and the reason I recommended it. Mine's not going to work either.
Yeah, they've got the Amvio and the phone power that they're pushing right off at like $40 a month.
Right.
And
it's frustrating.
Yeah, you might as well go with Magic Jack or one of the other ones that are, right, you know. But that's rather disappointing. My other question, if I may, is I'm visually handicapped, and I was wondering, other than the iPhone, if there's any phones out there that you would recommend for somebody that's blind for voice commands. Any recommendations?
I think any Android phone does a very good job. In fact, I would argue, so you're using Siri?
I'm not using anything.
Oh, you're not using anything?
I'm using an old school phone, and I basically have a couple of, you know, I can't really, you know, the problem with smartphones is that blind people can't see the touch
right
screen.
And as a result, Apple, Google, and Microsoft, all three have made great efforts to make their phones more accessible. The blind folks I know tell me that they like the iPhone best. And absolutely, Apple took the lead in accessibility for blind users. Absolutely. But I have to say, I feel like Android and even Windows Phone make great efforts to have screen readers. One thing you need, so you know what's on the screen, and voice commands. I think arguably Google's voice commands is the best of the bunch, but even Microsoft has added voice commands now, Cortana. It's not out yet, but it will be out on Windows Phone 8.1. If it's your first smartphone, get an iPhone. There's a larger community of blind users around it. Apple has always made careful assurances that they would support accessibility, particularly for blind people. I think it works quite well. Now, I'm not blind, so I'm speaking from what I've heard from friends who are blind.
You know, the problem there is, Leo, that I tend to lose things quite easily because I can't see, and that's something rather expensive to lose there.
Well, any smartphone's going to be expensive.
Yeah.
Even if it says, hey, no cost to you, the reason it is because you've signed up for 2 years. And if you lose the phone, you still have to pay for the 2-year service. So that means you're going to pay money. You can get insurance. Apple has AppleCare Pro, which is designed to replace the phone if you lose it. But it's not economical. You know, there's a deductible. I can't remember what it is, but it's fairly hefty. And you can only lose the phone once or twice a year, et cetera, et cetera. The good thing, there are ways to keep track of your phone. For instance, there are some Bluetooth headsets and things. And that might be very useful for you. The Bluetooth headsets, you tap the headset and it tells the iPhone, I'm talking to you. The iPhone listens and you say, you know, dial the tech guy. That's nice. No hands at all, except for tapping the earpiece. And some of these earpieces, when you get separated from one or the other, when the iPhone and the earpiece are out of range, both will make noise. And that's a nice warning that you've gone more than 30 feet away from your device. So there are ways not to lose it, I guess.
Well, I appreciate your coming back with the right answers there, and I'll
Good.
Have to figure out what I need to do there.
I'll
Leo.
Tell you what's happened with this.
Good Mother's Day.
Oh, happy Mother's Day to you too. Well, neither of us are mothers, but yeah, I'm sure we have moms. As far as I know, all of us have moms at some point. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. You know, the thing that I find most exciting about smartphones is not the phone. It's that you are carrying with you at all times. A very capable, very fast computer. Nowadays, smartphone processors are desktop class. They're very capable. You don't need power. All of them go a full day of heavy use, at least 12 hours, and the good ones go 15 and more. I mean, in my opinion, it's got to go 15. I want to charge it when I go to bed, disconnect it when I wake up, and that's it. And the best phones do that. They have always on connectivity. So you're always on the internet. That's amazing. These are amazing communication devices, and the phone is the least important part of the whole thing. So if you're coming from a feature phone, a traditional cell phone, you're really entering a new world. You're actually saying, I think I want to carry a computer in my pocket at all times. Music, video, email, texts, games, these things are incredible. And it's easy to take it for granted because it's kind of snuck up on us over the last 20 years. And really, the breakthrough was 2007 when Apple released the first iPhone. That was the revelation. We'd had smartphones from Nokia before, you know, and BlackBerry was a smartphone. Certainly, I love my BlackBerry. But the day the iPhone came out, that was the day I retired my BlackBerry. And really never looked back. Now, I carry a HTC One, the latest HTC One these days. That's my favorite phone, but there are great choices now, and these things are amazing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chat room's going down memory lane now. One of our favorite sponsors is back on the tech guy. We love Hover. He's trying to make a poem. We love Hover.com. Hover is the domain name registration system that just works. It just makes sense. That makes it easy for you to not only register a domain, but to manage the domains you've registered. And they're very affordable. They're very good in terms of service. Oh, they just got something new. .club. That's great. $10. So... maybe you don't know what I'm talking about when I say domain. When you want to create a .com address or a .net address, you want to go to a company, hover.com, and register it. That means you own it. It's yours. So get your name. You got a baby on the way. Get the baby's name. Got some friends that are getting married. Get the married name. You know, it's a fun thing to do. Do you ever do this, Heather, where a couple's getting married and you make a single name out of their two last names merged together? You know, like Brangelina, that kind of thing. Get See, if you knew Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie and you knew where they were getting married, you'd get Brangelina.com and you'd say, here's a wedding gift. Wouldn't that be great? Hover.com. Hover is always there for you. I wonder if, let me just see, is it Brangelina? How do you, B-R-A-N? B-R-A-D?
Bran.
B-R-A-N. Jolina. Yeah. Joe with a J-O-L-I-N-A, like that. Brangelina. Let's see if we can get a Brangelina.com. Maybe I could give it to them. It's a little late. But you know what? Maybe they'd like me. No, no. Brangelina.com. Yes, $15. I really should go out and get that. .net. See, Brad.
Did you put an O in there, though?
Look, there's .academy.
Wow.
Is it, am I spelling it wrong? Brangelina.
G-E-L.
Jelena? No. It's Angelina Jolie.
It has nothing to do with her last name.
It has nothing to do with her last name.
Brad and Angelina. Sorry.
Well, it happens that that's also available for $15. But look at this. Dot Academy? If you want like to start the school of Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, what about that? Dot org, dot info, dot biz, dot aero, dot bike, dot cab, dot camera. Look at all these new ones they've got. They're so cool. Everybody always wants .com, but sometimes, you know, .net's better. There's this new .club, which is great for a social group. Twit.club, we really should start. We should do that. It's kind of nice. Like the FloridaRotaryClub.com should be FloridaRotary.club, right? Lots of choices available. You can search from. Look, there's a sale on Brangelina.co. .contractors.construction.cool. Brangelina.cool. I want it. Brangelina.directory.domains.net. What? They've added a lot. Brangelina.guru. That's me. I'm an expert on Brangelina. Brangelina land. Am I spelling it wrong? It's with a G? Well, anyway, you get the idea. Hover.com. Okay, now, here's the other thing. You pick one. It's like a couple of clicks, and you own it. Not like some of those other places where there's 50 clicks, and you got to say, I don't want that. I don't want that. I don't want that. They give you what you need automatically as part of the price, who is privacy, so nobody can get your home address or home phone number. Easy to use, powerful tools to manage your domain. And, of course, the best 24/7 support. In fact, they've got a no-hold policy. When you call them during business hours, they will... You will get a rep that will handle your problem, answer your question, and is empowered to do it right. You can even get dot just about anything? No. Hover.com, use a promo code TTG and the number 5, and you will get 10% off your first purchase. Hover.com. It's really a great way to do it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Dylan is on the line from Apple. Wait a minute. Appledorn, Holland? Hi, Dylan. Are you there? Oh, I got to push this button. Wait a minute. Okay. Hi, Dylan.
Hi.
You're calling us from the Netherlands?
Yep.
That's awesome. What can I do for you today?
Yeah, I love your shows, and I would like to start a podcast by myself.
Wait a minute. Are you American living in Holland?
Yeah.
Because you don't sound like you have a Dutch accent. So you want to do a podcast. What about?
About tech, just like you do.
You want to be the next tech guy?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Then in Holland.
But the Holland guy. That's actually a good idea. And everybody in the Netherlands speaks English pretty well, right? I mean, not everybody, but yeah. Most people do. So an English language podcast would probably do fine in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that the good news is doing a podcast is really easy. All you have to do is have a computer. You got one of those?
Yeah, I'm using it right now.
Yeah. See, you're Skyping me. And it sounds like you're not using the computer's microphone. It sounds like you got a headset. You got a headset?
No, I got headphones and I got a new microphone a few days ago.
You sound great. So that's perfect for a podcast. Now you've got everything you need. The real question, if you're going to do a podcast, is bandwidth. Where do you put it so you don't have to pay anything? And my suggestion is always YouTube. YouTube is where everybody is. You might say, well, wait a minute, I don't want to do a video podcast. Well, record it in the camera and turn on, and then just be you sitting there. It could still be listened to, and YouTube is free, and it's got global distribution, global presence. I think that that's be the first place I'd look. There are other places that are for audio only, but I don't, you know, the free ones are not great. Archive.org is free. Then there's also places like Libsyn, which are inexpensive, Libsyn, but not free. I'm thinking, how old are you?
I'm 11. Almost 12.
Hey, that's great. I'm so impressed, Dylan. This is great. So, but I'm guessing that pocket change is not plentiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't want to go somewhere where you're going to cost you $20 a month, because why should you? Now, here's an interesting choice, too. Now, I don't. You may be too young. I'm sure you are too young to take advantage of this. But if you can get somebody over 13 to join you, Patreon, PATREON.com. Now, here's what's interesting about them. They have a podcast service that allows you to charge a subscription fee. So you can say, you know, I wouldn't charge $100, but you could say, hey, if you want to hear Dylan's Tech Podcast and maybe get some of your friends, give me $1 per show, and you could make a little money on the side.
Yeah, I heard about that one.
Patreon's pretty cool.
YouTube videos.
Yeah. Patreon's pretty cool. It was started by a guy named Jack Conte, who actually started it because he needed it. He has a very popular YouTube group called Pomplamoose. You ever hear of them? They're
yeah,
real.
I watched your triangulation.
Yeah, we interviewed them. They're great. And so he realized, I want to do this. I like making music. I don't want to have to get a record label to do it. I want to do it on my own. So he started up Patreon so he could say, hey, every time I make a video, if you want to make a donation to me every time I make a video. And Patreon does hosting too. So the issue for you is because you're 11 or 12, you're, you know, 13 is the cutoff in the U.S. for the Child Online Protection Act, or COPPA. And
okay. They
have strict privacy regulations on people under 13. Generally, most sites, and this includes Facebook, Twitter, and probably Patreon, don't allow you to sign up if you're under 13. Just because the regulatory burden is great on that. So maybe dad can help you, or you could get a friend who's older can help you. And I think that would really be a great place to at least try it. Now, you've got to get your friend. You got to market it, because if people don't know you're there, they're not going to. So you got to get people excited about what you're doing. So maybe you do it for free for a little while. Build up a community, because what podcasting is all about, we don't like to call it audience. You know, on TV and radio, it's the audience. In podcasting, we like to call it a community. Do you know what the difference is between an audience and a community?
Not really.
It is in the degree of engagement, how much your audience participates. An audience, think of an audience as a bunch of people sitting back with their arms folded saying, amuse me. That's an audience. A theater audience, a television audience, that's an audience. For podcasting, that's not enough. You need people who are as engaged and excited about the subject matter as you are, who want to participate with you. Maybe we have a chat room. Maybe you have a chat room. Maybe you have them on the air. Maybe you want to build a community, people of participate with you, not people who just sit there with their arms folded and said, "Amuse me." So that's the goal. That's what really makes. It's not just podcasting. This is true of anything you do on the internet these days. You want an engaged, a live audience. As it turns out, so does radio, so does TV, so does theater. The truth is nobody wants an audience. Everybody wants a community. And, oh, you know what the other good thing is? The community? It's made of chocolate. No, I made that part up. It woke up Heather, though. That was like that angry hipmunk or whatever, chipmunk. What? It's made of chocolate? No, it's not. But it is pretty rewarding to have a community. It's something magical that happens when you have a group of people who are engaged in what you're doing, who want to listen to you, want to participate. And I realized that after many years in radio. And when we started doing podcasts, that was something we really tried to do, is make sure that everybody felt included. Can you do that? Do you have friends who are into what you're into? What is so tech might be too broad. Pick something like do you do Minecraft, Dylan?
Oh yeah, I played that a lot. I just played that this night.
Yeah, so figure out what you're most excited about. Now you might notice there's a lot of Minecraft podcasts out there, so maybe that's a little competitive.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think find something that you love. And you know, if you, for instance, if you like every Thursday night went down to the local game shop and played, or comic book store and played Dungeons and Dragons, that's a community. And those are people who'd be interested if you did a show about it. That kind of thing. You know what I'm talking about? The thing you care the most about.
Yep.
Hey, Dylan, good luck to you. Do you have a name for it?
I'm going to look for that still.
Yeah. Sometimes people come up with a name before they come up with the rest of the stuff. They print in Silicon Valley, they call it make it print in the T-shirt. You print the T-shirt before you actually have a product. That's always a bad sign. Think long and hard about what it is that you would like to talk about every day or every week for the rest of your life. Is there something like that? That's the thing you should do a show about.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Hey, it's great to talk to you. Good luck, Dylan.
Yeah.
Are you going to stay in Appledorn, or are you coming home, or what's the plan?
Well, we moved here like 4 years ago, and I'm planning on moving over when I'm older.
Yeah, but your folks are going to stay there, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you now speak Dutch pretty well?
Yeah, after 4 years I can, yeah.
That's fabulous. So you're bilingual. That is, by the way, a huge value. Maybe you should do something in Dutch. There's less competition, isn't there?
Yeah.
Maybe do it in Dutch.
Yeah, that's smart.
You could call it the Little Dutch Boy Podcast. Hey, it's great to talk to you, Dylan. Good luck with your career. This is how it begins. But I tell my kids this, I tell everybody this, find something you care about because you're going to be doing it every week for the rest of your life. It better be something you love to do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, more to come right after this. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet, home theater, digital photography. And, of course, smartphones, anything with a chip in it. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. That's 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. We get calls from all over the world. Dylan called from the Netherlands. You just use Skype, and it's a free call for you. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. Pete's in Brooklyn. That's anywhere. Hi, Pete. Leo Laporte. Good to talk to you. My favorite town. One of my favorite towns. Love Brooklyn.
Hi. Yeah, me too.
Yeah. What can I do for you?
I got two questions. They're quick. One, I'm trying to encrypt an external hard drive.
Yep.
So basically that anyone, you know, if they, let's say they were to use my computer, in order to access it, they'd have to enter a password.
Yeah.
That's one.
Yep.
And two, a couple of weeks ago, somebody called about the Android box. I think they bought on Amazon.
Yeah.
It was a... I bought one, but I don't know how to add the channels. Is there like a link somewhere that you would know?
What was the name of that? Was it the G? What was it?
The G box. Yeah, it's a Maricom or something.
Yeah, Metricom G box. That's
Metricom,
it.
Metricom.
Yeah. I don't. You know, I never did get it. It's XBMC running on it, so I don't think it's too hard to add the channels. You may need to install this. Does it seem to have software running on it?
Yes, it has Android, and then there's a launcher where you can select XBMC.
Yeah.
I'm new to XBMC.
Yeah, I think you launch XBMC, and it may be you need to add a plug-in for a channel guide. You know what? I'll watch the chat room, and I'm sure that they will have. In fact, if you can get in there, some of them have it, and they'll have an easy answer for you. I haven't used it, so I'm not an expert on it. But I'm glad. So it works, but you're just trying to get it configured. It's all under $100. It's kind of a neat idea.
Nice.
Yeah. It looks a little bit like an Apple TV. It's a little black box, but it's running XBMC and Android. Yeah.
It's pretty nice. I was trying to set it up Friday night, and it was asking me for, you know, like a repository name.
Yeah, so that's,
you know, put in a link.
Yeah, that's okay. So it's looking for data basically. There's two things, of course. You can add apps from repositories, but it sounds like when it says repositories, probably looking for where the guide information is, and that's kind of the issue. Is with all of these is guides traditionally cost money. If you buy a TiVo, for instance, you have to pay a subscription fee of $15 a month, and that's pretty much for the guide. So getting a free guide is, I mean, there are free guides. I'm not sure exactly how it works, though. Red Penguin says repositories are the places that store add-ons. I'm guessing you need an add-on for the program guide. And so first you have to find a repository. If you Google XBMC repositories, you'll find an address of many of them.
But do you have to install, like, let's say, from a zip file?
It probably is an APK, but you know, that's again, I don't know. I'll tell you what, I will keep an eye on the chat room. I'm sure somebody will tell us there and fill us in. You said was that your question, or did you have another question?
No, well, the other question was, I have an iMac.
Oh, the hard drive. Yeah.
Yes.
So let me answer that, and while I'm answering that, I bet you the chat room will give you some suggestions, and I'll relay them off to you. So all operating systems have built-in encryption capabilities. A Mac has a File Vault. Windows have BitLocker. Those are the easiest to use because all you have to do is, you know, you do it from the operating system and turn it on. And generally speaking, it's very convenient and simple. Sometimes people don't trust those because maybe they don't trust Apple or they don't trust Microsoft. They don't know it's not open source, so you can't verify whether or not, you know, the NSA has access to the data if there's what we call a backdoor. So people who are paranoid will use an open source program called TrueCrypt. That's available from TrueCrypt.org. A little more complicated to use, but many more features.
Can you encrypt external hard drives with TrueCrypt?
Absolutely. What you're looking for is something called full volume encryption. And you can encrypt internal, external, whatever. You can encrypt a single folder. You can encrypt the whole drive. Whole drive encryption is probably a good idea on an external drive, especially if you carry it around. You know, I for instance, my photo drives that I bring when I travel, you know, are portable hard drives. They're in my luggage. They're in my carry-on. They're in the hotel room. I always encrypt those. I don't want somebody stealing the drive and getting access to all my photos. So, because that's my life on those photos. So I always encrypt those drives. So that's a very good reason, in fact, to encrypt an external drive. I use Mac, so I use the built-in OS File Vault encryption. It's totally transparent. Once you know, on any of these, the first time you turn it on, it'll take a little while to encrypt that drive. But after that, on modern computers, doesn't slow it down. You don't notice it. It's just not there.
My friend was telling me that the operating system could do it, but it'll, like you said, it'll take a while. I have a 4 terabyte external.
Yeah, the first time you do it, go to bed.
Gotcha.
It won't take weeks. It'll take a night. and I'm sure you don't have it's not the terabytes. 4 terabytes not full.
Almost. I got about maybe 500.
Holy moly. There's a lot of videos on there and stuff.
Yeah. BitTorrent and, you know.
So the chat room says that the best repository, or at least one person in the chat room, likes SuperRepo, SuperRepo.org. There is a wiki at wiki.xbmc.org that has lots of information. That's probably a good thing for you to know about, wiki.xbmc.org, because you can then find all of the information you need about setting it up. XBMCHub.com, Darth Satan in our chat room says is a good place also for information. XBMCHub.com. Basically, you're having to learn how to use XBMC.
Gotcha. Leo, thank you very much. Love you guys.
All right.
And the chat room. And
next time I'm in Brooklyn, we'll share a bagel, maybe a pizza.
I wish, definitely.
All right. Take care, Pete. Brooklyn's such an interesting town. People don't. It seems like people don't leave. If you're born in Brooklyn, you stay there. Pretty much stay there. It's like you're in heaven already. Why? Where else would you go? 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. Tom's next. Riverside, California. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I've been looking on the internet for a dash cam for my van. I make a lot of trips back east, and I've been avoiding wrecks, but I don't know if I'm going to continue, and I'd like to get one on video if I have to go to court.
Not a bad idea. Do you use a GPS as well?
Yeah, I have a Garmin.
Good.
GPS.
Then get the Garmin dash cam. Yeah, that makes it very easy to use because you already have the head end in effect. So a dash cam is, I think, a really interesting idea. It records all the time, but if there's a wreck, it saves. It's like, okay, I'm going to save that one. Something bad happened. The Garmin dash cam from Garmin is $220. They may be less expensive version. You know, you could shop around, probably get a less. That's probably the list. But since you already have a Garmin, this is, and a lot of people recommend this as a very good one. It's a high def recorder. It has a little LCD display, so you see what it's recording. Of course, audio and video, you can actually have the date and time recorded right on the video, which is useful if you have to go to court. It records in high def if you wish. It uses its own built-in 4 gigabyte card to record to and loops it around. Now, 4 gigs is probably enough to loop, you know, an hour's worth of recording or more, several hours actually. So I think this is it's a big wide-angle lens. That's another thing, because you want to get everything, right? You don't want to just see what's right in front of you.
Right.
Yeah. And that's, you should know, and it says this.
The GPS?
Yeah, we'll integrate with it, which is nice.
Right.
You should know, and it says this on the site, that there's, in some places it's illegal to mount something on your windshield, so you should make sure that it's legal in where you're going to use it.
Right.
But I think this is, I think of all of them, there are lots of companies that make these. Some of them are very cheap. But Garmin is it's a name brand, and because you already have a Garmin GPS, I think this is the way to go. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll keep those calls going. The website techguylabs.com has all the links I mentioned. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. Let's go back to the phones. Gary is in Oceanside, California.
Hey, Leo, good talking to you again. I got a suggestion for you for your show.
Oh, all right, yeah.
Okay, so, you know, just like you have, we have a segment on photos and we have a segment on travel. I love both of those things. I want to urge you to consider putting on something called, I know you had a show before called The Cord Cutters.
Yes.
You have a five-minute segment of that. And then also do another segment called Contract Cutters. So here's the thing. I'm 10 years older than you, and I'm spending about $150 a month for two cell phones, two smartphones, my wife and me.
Right.
And we're spending about $150 on cable.
I know. It just kills you, doesn't it?
Well, yes. And so I know that, you know, we could cut some of that out. We love Netflix and that sort of a thing. So I just like to know what my options are, because, like, you know, anybody can go to Walmart and get a $45 a month plan, but the phones are basically not really good phones. So that's kind of the rub. And I
agree, it'd be a great segment. Although it is something we talk about a lot, both cord cutting and contract cutting. That is saving money on your smartphone and then saving money on your cable bill. I'll start with the cable bill. Of course, a lot of the content that you watch is available on the internet, and the cable companies know this, and it frankly worries the heck out of them.
Sure.
What they've been doing, and you may have noticed this, but it's been slow, so maybe you've just kind of absorbed it without thinking about it, is they've been making sure that the cost of cable plus internet is not much more than internet alone. So in order to get a good, you know, you might as well, most people go, well, I might as well throw in basic cable because it costs almost nothing.
Yeah.
And then, of course, oh, but boy, it'd be nice to watch HBO. And you say, well, oh, don't worry, because look, there's an HBO Go app on the internet. I could just, oh, and then it says, what's your cable company? And you
enter
that in, and it says, oh, sorry, you're not paying for HBO to the cable company. Now, there's a couple of reasons for that. One, I mean, I'm sure HBO would, in its heart of hearts, prefer just to go directly to the customers. They don't want to give anything to the cable company. They're beholden to them. But they can't do it yet. That time will come. But it's not here yet. They actually have been trying it, I think, in Scandinavia. But in the U.S., if they started to do that to the cable companies, presuming their contracts even allow it, because they may not, but if the contracts allowed it, the cable companies would start pulling the plug on them. And we'd get in a nasty battle. So the cable companies basically are holding on with grim determination. They don't want to become a wholesale provider of bits. The other way they're assaulting this is through Congress and the FCC. Both Congress and the FCC have been fairly positive, favorable towards the cable and the cell industry. It's another reason why contract cutting is so hard. The laws and the FCC regulations seem to really favor them. The laws and regulations gave the cable companies a monopoly in most areas. Most areas you have one and exactly one choice for cable, which means there's no competition. They can charge whatever they want. Where else are you going to go? Well, satellite, I guess. But for many people, that's not a great choice. So we need to get some competition in here, I think, pronto. And then you might see, you know, a choice. But for right now, we have for a developing nation, for the nation where the internet was born, we have among the worst internet access speeds and prices. And that really has a lot to do with the fact that these companies are monopolies. Same thing in the cell phone industry. You may say, well, there's four of them, plus a lot of little guys. But they all act like monopolies with early termination fees, with, you know, egregious marketing that basically misrepresents what you're getting. These companies, the cable companies and the wireless companies, are among the most greedy, selfish, grasping corporate entities in America. And unfortunately, that's how we get our internet. And we're all hooked on cell phones now.
For sure.
So it's a tough battle. I do believe in the long run, the consumer will win. I think one of the great things about the internet is it empowers consumers like never before with knowledge. And knowledge means that they can move around. We talk. We talk here. We talk on the internet. We say, hey, there's a better deal here. There's a better way there. Right to this guy there. And allowing us to organize. And there right now, there's a fairly large movement afoot to get the FCC to, you know, deregulate competition on the internet and make sure that open access is available to all. And that's a really important fight. On Wednesday, the commission will vote on new rules, whether to propose new rules about what they call open access. You may remember they put out rules that said that no internet service provider could harm the internet by slowing anybody down. Verizon sued and won.
Yeah.
The court said, well, this is a good thing. We like open internet. We believe in it. We know it's important for the economy, for society, for the country. But you don't have the right to do it as currently constituted. The Telecommunications Act doesn't allow you to do this, FCC. And then they said in a little whisper, go back to the drawing board. Because they knew that we got to make this work. The FCC has gone back to the drawing board, and we'll find out what they're proposing on Wednesday. There's considerable concern about it. But I don't think we really know yet, so we'll know Wednesday. The good news is that vote on Wednesday will merely put those rules on the table and then open up a public comment period of 30 days. That will give all of us time to read it and to say what we want and to tell both Congress and the FCC. And we're already geared up. The internet community is ready. We've got our pitchforks. We got our torches. We're ready to storm the gates. And they know it, by the way. Tom Wheeler, the chairman of the FCC, stung, I think, by criticism from me and many other sources, spoke to the Cable Television Association this week and warned him, said, you know what? Don't count on us ruling in your favor. It's going to be tough for you going forward. So I hope he's right, because frankly, these companies do not have America's public's interest at heart. They are squeezing us. And look at your cable bill and cell phone bill, and that's all you need to know.
For sure.
$300 a month you're paying for that. And you know what? It's worth it. It's too much. But we want this stuff. We get, you know, and I think the real issue is going to be creating competition. That's the American way. If there's competition and people want something and somebody can come along and say, okay, I'm going to give it to you. Affordable, high-speed access, I'm going to give it to you. They'll win in the marketplace. And that's really the long run. I talk to a lot of people say, you don't want the government on the internet. I agree. You don't want the government regulating the internet. That's a dangerous road to go down. But they created this problem in the first place. And we do need to have an open internet. The best solution would be eliminate all of these monopolistic regulations and allow companies to compete. Tell the cable companies, for instance, you have to offer your physical plant to alternative internet service providers, just as we have told the phone companies to do. That would be a big step in the right direction. So I love the idea of a segment, Gary. I'll make sure I talk about this as much as possible. I think it's very important. Very important. This is maybe the most important issue in front of the technology today. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Chris Marquardt has the week off. He's up at Everest or Kathmandu or something. He's on another one of his photographic workshops in the high mountains of Tibet. Wow, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. But he'll be back in a couple of weeks. We still have an assignment. So don't feel... No, you're not off the hook. You still have homework to do. No, I shouldn't say that. Then nobody will want to do it. What we do is we ask you to take pictures just for fun. He's going to review pictures in a couple of weeks when he comes back. Upload those pictures to Flickr.com to our Tech Guy group, which is a really fun group. There are 11,000 members right now at the Tech Guy group. Our current assignment is Rounded. Rounded. So, you know, you have to take new pictures. This is not an excuse to take old pictures. I have to say the group has come up with some really good ones. illustrating the word, the concept, the notion of rounded. I like that. There's fun. If you go to Flickr.com, look for the Tech Guy group, 11,000 strong. That's how you'll know you're the right one. And it's free, of course. All of this is free. And there's no prize. There's just the satisfaction of knowing you have participated and perhaps you will get picked as one of the pictures Chris talks about. Roscoe in the chat room says, I took a picture of my belly. Mine too. That would work. Kathy in Laurel, Maryland, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. It's really good to speak with you.
Thank you.
And I wanted to provide hopefully some encouragement to the blind gentleman who's considering
good.
Getting a smartphone.
Good.
I'm blind and in my 50s and have been using an iPhone since 2010 or so. And I wanted to say if it would make it easier for him to take the plunge that maybe he should buy an iPod. And
oh, like an iPod Touch.
Yeah.
It's the same as an iPhone minus the phone.
Yeah, well, it would just give him confidence with learning pretty much what he needs to learn, and therefore it wouldn't be such a shock when he gets his iPhone if he goes that way. And, like, within 2 months, I had taken it on a trip and was using Skype in the hotel and all. I mean,
oh, that's so great.
Awesome.
So did you have somebody work with you, or were you able to teach yourself?
I did have someone work with me, a friend that I met, and also their lists on Google for both Android and the iPhone that he can check into.
Good. Yeah, I feel like setting it up, turning it on is hard because you do need to be able to see the screen to turn it on. But once it's on, it seems like it should be pretty intuitive. I do know that if you buy it from the Apple Store, I can't speak for the carrier's stores, but I do know if you buy it from the Apple Store, they will set it up for you with you
standing.
Yeah,
they will. That's what I did. You know, they set it up so that it would talk, and so it's really good. And they've helped me tremendously when I got a Mac at the store and over their 1-800 Apple number. It's been great.
Well, that's been my experience as well. I think Apple, they cost more, but I think that one of the things they put that money towards is excellent support and service.
Mm-hmm. And, well, otherwise, for keeping track of it, I mean, I've never had a problem with it. I've known sighted people that lose their iPhones more than any of us have.
It's really about personality, not about ability.
Yeah. I mean, couldn't he, like, use the holster or the armband thing?
Strap it to your wrist. Yeah. No, actually, I had an iPhone case for a long time, the Rock Form, R-O-K. In fact, I recommend this. These are great cases, R-O-K-F-O-R-M. And they have these wonderful cases. You can get plastic or you can get aluminum, which is more pricey, but they really are nice. And these cases have a few features that really make it a little easier to keep track of your iPhone. For one thing, they have a wrist strap on the case, if you wish, which will let you put it on your wrist, which means you're much less likely to lose it. And it's always to hand. But they also have, on the back of the Rock Form cases, they have special openings for attachments. So you can get for instance, I have a knob on my dashboard, and you click the phone right into that knob, and it's right there. You can have one by your bedside. You can have one wherever you spend a lot of time. It makes it very easy to have somewhere you put the phone. They also could put a big magnet in the back, and that does not hurt the phone. These are powerful magnets, and I frequently would just put my iPhone on the fridge. Just boom, sticks right there. It's a great party trick too. So these are great cases. They protect, but I think they're very functional as well. And maybe a good way not to lose the phone, rokform.com. Hey, I'm so glad you called in, Kathy, because I wanted to get the validation for somebody who's used it as a blind person.
Yeah, thanks.
Great. Have a great day. Happy Mother's Day. Bye-bye. Bill in Lewis, Delaware. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey.
Thanks for taking my call. I really enjoy your show. I watch it on the internet.
Thank you.
We have a situation at our church, and occasionally I'll do the sound for weddings. And we have some older CD players. So I have two women walk in, and each one has a CD.
Mm-hmm.
One's a commercial CD, and I pop that in a player, and I throw it through the soundboard, and it works fine.
Sure.
The other lady walks in with a CD that she made off her computer, and it will not work.
Yeah, there are a couple of reasons this happens. And unfortunately, you know, people who are burning their own CDs may not be expert in the technology involved. If she's burning it, there's two ways you can burn a disc, optical disc, CD, DVD, whatever. There's disc at once, which is the normal way. You know, you launch your burning program, Roxio or whatever. You put all the tracks in there and you say, make a disc out of that. That's the most reliable way to do it. But sometimes people have a setting where they just drag files onto the CD. And if you don't finalize it after you do that, it will not be a usable disc. So,
well, I've done it actually at home. I've done songs off of iTunes and I made a disc. And in fact,
yeah, iTunes does burn it once.
The CD, I believe.
Yeah, if she's doing it from iTunes, you can only do disc at once. And that's the most compatible. There's another problem that can come up, which is the way a burnable disc works is different from the way a commercially pressed disc works. Mm-hmm. Commercially pressed disc has a reflective surface, you know, that foil surface behind it, and actually physical pits and bumps on the plastic medium. The laser light hits it, reflects off of the reflective medium, and it reads a bit as a bump and a one as a bump and a zero as a pit, and that's how it gets the ones and zeros. In order for, you know, you a laser in a CVD burner in a computer is not going to melt the plastic. So it does something using a dye change technology. It does heat the disc, but the dye changes colors. And some CD players don't like it. It's harder to read. It's not as luminous. And so sometimes a burned disc on a home, but now you say you've burned discs and brought it in and played it on that exact same CD player.
Actually, I did one yesterday, one I had burned at home, and it worked.
All right.
That same CD will not work on another CD player.
Well, and that's why, right? Because
older players, is that?
Yes, often it's older players, exactly. And it could just be a difference, a variation among players, period. Like the laser's not as bright. There's a third thing that happens. It's funny, we haven't talked about this in so long because, you know what, people don't burn discs much anymore. But
sing at weddings do.
Yeah, you need to. But I mean, more and more we're moving away from physical media to just downloading stuff. And that's maybe what happened. She may have made a data disc.
Well, that could be. I have no idea. But we had to scramble to find a laptop to make it work.
And it worked on a laptop. Well, data disc would work on a laptop, as would sometimes home recorded discs. This isn't something you can always do right. There are going to be problems from time to time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by Gazelle.com, a great place to go, a marketplace for used goods, used gadgets, the stuff collecting dust in your drawers, in your desk, in your closet. In the case, I know two people, both of them hosts here at Twit, who have rented spaces for their old gadgets. Like they rent a room. Dick DiBartolo, he has the Gadget Warehouse, which is basically a place he just brings old gadgets. And John C. Dvorak. They both had so many gadgets over years of reviewing stuff that they just, you know, they literally pay money to store them. This is not your. This is not, even if you have a lot of gadgets, these things can be turned into cash with Gazelle, GAZELLE.com. You can sell your gadgets a fast and simple way. Let me tell you a little bit about how it works. Now, they don't buy everything, but they buy iPhones, iPods, iPads. They like the Apple stuff. In fact, they'll even buy Apple computers, Apple TVs, Apple displays. But they also will buy tablets from Amazon. The Kindle Fire tablets. They'll buy Microsoft Surfaces, Samsung Notes, Google Nexus tablets, the Asus tablets, and they'll buy cell phones from BlackBerry. Now, you're probably not going to get a lot of money, but you know what? It's more money than you have right now with your BlackBerry. I'm just curious. What's a BlackBerry worth? A Z10 in good condition. $45. It's better than nothing. On the other hand, what do you think an iPhone 5 is worth? You got maybe you want to step up to the new 5S. You've been eyeing it. You got an old iPhone 5, good quality. If you unlock it, and they tell you how to unlock it, it's $225. Or you could send it to them. They'll unlock it, $185. Well, that's a good deal. Now, here's the best part. This price is guaranteed for 30 days. You do not have to decide today. So go and get a quote for all your stuff. you know, it won't take long before you can get into the thousands of dollars. And then you got 30 days to decide. When once you pull the trigger and say get paid, they'll send you a box prepaid mailer. So the shipping is paid on anything worth more than a buck. And they will then turn it around very quickly. If you forget to wipe the data or can't, sometimes with the device you can't get it powered up or whatever, they'll wipe the data for you. And then they'll send you a check, a PayPal credit. Or if you buy a lot of stuff at Amazon, get the Amazon gift card because that's bumped. They bump it 5% just as a little, I guess they probably return the affiliate fee or something like that. GAZELLE.com. 30-day quotes. They will buy broken iPhones and iPads. Yes, they are worth more than a buck. They're actually surprisingly valuable. Gazelle.com. Sell your gadgets the fast and simple way. Join the 700,000 customers today who have been paid more than $100 million. Gazelle.com. Yeah, you know what? If they announce an Apple TV at WWDC, you'll be glad you got a quote for your old ass. See, this is a good, that's a good example. Get a quote for your Apple TV like 30 days before the keynote at WWDC. When is that? That's now. I think you can do it now. Or is it in June? Anyway, get a quote 30 days before. And then if they do announce a new Apple TV, the price will plummet, right? But your price is locked in. Hey, smart, huh? Thinking. Now you're thinking. Gazelle. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Good question in the chat room. I thought I'd answer this because I think a lot of people are interested in it. When you buy a computer these days and you're looking for speed, it's great to get an SSD, a solid-state disk drive. That's the same. It's basically, it's flash memory. It's the same kind of memory you get in your camera or whatever, usually tuned to be faster. And what you'll find on modern computers is an SSD drive can speed the boot up time to get it down to 5 seconds, 10 seconds. It can speed the reading of files so much that your computer actually feels faster. We always focus on the speed of the processor, but the speed of the hard drive makes a big difference. If your processor's sitting there saying, oh, I'll get the data someday, waiting for the data from the drive, this can make a huge difference. And most, by the way, processors today are so fast, they do spend most of their time waiting for you to do something or for the drive to read. Literally, they're, most of the time, if you lived at the speed of a modern microprocessor at 2 gigahertz, and there's four of them at 2 gigahertz or 3 gigahertz, it would seem like hundreds of years in between key presses, even with a fast typist. It would seem like hundreds of years for you to get some the dribs and drabs of data from the hard drive. I've been waiting for decades. So a faster hard drive makes a big, big difference. And these solid-state drives can sometimes be five times faster than a spinning disk. There's a negative. They're more expensive. The cost per gigabyte, which is generally the best way to, you know, measure the cost of a hard drive, is you know, fairly steep, although getting better. Same thing happened to hard drives. They used to be extremely expensive. And as they get better at manufacturing and as more people buy them, the prices drop. So an SSD is a great choice. Now, there are a few things you should know about. If you're upgrading an existing system, often that's not the best choice because older systems don't, they're not as fast as the hard drive. You know, the speed of what we call the I.O. bus, the highway that takes the data from the hard drive and sends it into memory or sends it to the processor. If that highway is a country road, is a 35 mile an hour speed limit, doesn't matter if you've got a Ferrari, you're gonna drive. So it's important to make sure that you have a high speed connection for an SSD. I would recommend a SATA 2 or better. That's S-A-T-A, the number 2. Or better. That's a fairly modern interconnect for hard drives. The best, though, even better than SATA, is the PCI Express bus. And Apple and others now are starting to make computers where the solid-state drive is not on a normal hard drive connection, but is on a right on the motherboard. There's a PCI Express slot. Boom, that's where the controller is. And, man, that makes a difference. On my new Mac Pro, on my MacBooks with Retina display, the newer MacBookers with Retina display, PCIe SSDs are unbelievably fast. Then you really see some speeds. So if you're buying a new computer, you should certainly investigate an SSD. You, again, you'll be paying a little more for a little less storage. But often, you know, we're spoiled with storage, right? Even 128 gigabytes, which is small today, is plenty of space for an operating system and a lot of data. So consider an SSD. If you're buying an aftermarket SSD, again, make sure that the computer is fast enough to support it. And then there are some good places for reviews. My favorite is a guy named Alan Melvantano. He's a officer in the Coast Guard, but he's also a fanatic on solid-state technology. And he writes about solid-state technology for a website called PC Perspective. It's at PCPER.com. They actually are regulars on one of our podcasts here this week in Computer Hardware. And they talk about that's how I met Alan. They talk about it all the time. So if you go to the storage section there, you can read about these SSDs. You know, they've really come down in price and they've increased in capacity. SanDisk has just announced a 4 terabyte solid state drive. That's for business. I wouldn't recommend buying that. But read Alan's reviews, and in particular, it's not merely the brand. It's as much the controller that the brand uses on the SSD that makes a big difference. So there's lots of reviews for solid state drives in here. That's pretty much what they review these days. And I think it's a great choice. And if you're buying a new computer, look for one with a solid state drive, and especially look for one with a solid state drive that's on the PCI Express bus. PCIe. One concern people often express with solid state drives is this notion that they are going to wear out faster. In fact, modern solid-state drives use technology, wear-leveling technology, that means that, as far as I can tell, they're at least as reliable as spinning drives, maybe even more so, because there's no moving parts. They're certainly more energy efficient. They're lighter weight. They're great for portables because they don't use as much power. Battery life goes up. Heat is not as much of an issue. They're really, I think, a very good choice. I would guess that we're not going to see spinning drives in laptops much longer. I would guess that almost all laptops, except the very lowest prices laptops, will be solid state drives. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, home theater. You know, I should toot my own horn. I am the man who taught Regis Philbin how to tweet. Does that count?
Is that like, thank you,
is that a claim to fame? Well, you know what? It's good to, all around, because, yes, I taught him to tweet. And 2 weeks later, he said, I hate this Twitter. And he gave up on it. But it was an amazing thing. We did it for one of his shows. In fact, it was the show he announced his retirement on. So it was kind of poignant for me to be there. I'd been doing Live with Regis and Kelly for 12 years, since 2001. And so it was a very poignant moment for me. And he had announced his retirement on the show that day. We went upstairs to his office, and I showed him how to use Twitter. They recorded it for a later show. And he can't type. You know, he's going, hunting and pecking it out. But his first tweet was, today I announced that I am leaving the show at the end of whatever, September. And then he said, but I can't remember. He had to put a little joke in there. He name dropped. It was good. It was a perfect tweet. And, oh, Leo, I typed this all out. How do you? And then I said, send. And he said, oh, well, that was satisfying. And I said, okay, now, Regis, go look and see who's replied to you. And it blew him away. He was getting immediately, because hundreds of people followed that Twitter account for Live. And he was getting all these. He called us. He said, Joy, get on the Twitter. Look at the response. He was moved. He'd never had that kind of response. He never had that kind of two-way response from his audience. Remember, we were talking earlier with Dylan from the Netherlands, who wanted to be a podcaster. And I said, the difference between an audience and a community.
Right.
An audience is people who just sit there and say, entertain me. A community is people who interact with you. And thanks to things like Twitter, I think more and more people are interacting directly. I watch The Voice. And to see people interacting via Twitter with Blake Shelton and the other hosts is really quite amazing. Unfortunately, there's a downside to this. And while it was initially very exciting for Regis, after a couple of weeks, got pretty tired of all the sniping. That's it, I'm done. And that's the other side of this. You get a community, they talk back to you. And if you've worked for 50 or 60 years in broadcasting where you never had anybody talk back to you, suddenly hearing from your audience is a mixed, can be a mixed blessing. Terry in Whittier, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Terrier. Terry.
Hey, hi, Leo.
How are you?
Terry, thanks so much for taking my call. Quick question. Well, I'll make it quick. I have an 86-year-old mother, and happy Mother's Day to her.
Oh, happy Mother's Day, Ma. That's
great.
Yeah,
thanks. Yeah. And, you know, she just feels so out of it because she is not part of social media.
Sure. The whole world has changed, right? Yeah.
Exactly. So let me tell you what I've done. I got her an iPad, and it was too difficult. She's arthritic in her hands, and she just couldn't get it. May try it again. But she saw this new computer called Wow. And it was $1,000, and I thought, I don't know, it just sounded too much. Granted, it came with a printer, which I know printers are cheap now. And I looked at ARP, and I can't seem to find the right computer or the
right
device.
Do not buy the Wow computer. That is a terrible idea.
Yeah, I saw a couple of good reviews, but most of them were not. And you know what? She used to have that webmail or the web something.
Yeah, web TV. And Microsoft bought them and turned them into MSN. And they've killed it. It's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And that was nice because it was on your television. You could sit back. You had a keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly what people like your mom want to do, and my mom is almost the same age, uses an iPad and loves it, but she's not arthritic, is email and browsing the web. Mom is big into knitting, and she's a member of Knitterly, which is a community for knitters. Loves it, right? She takes pictures with her iPad, emails them out. I got her a stylus. She draws pictures on the iPad. I got an Easter card from her that she drew on her iPad. So it's a great device, but if you can't physically use it, of course, it's not very useful. And that's the problem with the Wow computer for your mom is it's a touch computer. Now, it's a bigger screen.
I think the same with the keyboard, because she can use the keyboard.
Okay. So the idea of this, and I'm a little nervous about it. I'd have to get one. The idea is it's running Windows, but it's hidden. Underneath a interface with big buttons, it'll be easy. They say you never have to buy any software because it has everything you want to do on it. That's not saying much. You can't. You know, it says new programs and updates are provided for the life of your Wow. You can Zoom it, which is cool. You know, I shouldn't say don't buy. It just seems awfully expensive.
Awfully expensive. She was close to pulling the trigger, and I said, oh, my gosh, no, let me look into it.
Yeah.
And, I just haven't found anything. Like I said, I went on ARP. And
yeah, I mean, this is designed, and by the way, the company First Street that does it does do some good stuff for seniors. So they do offer a 30-day trial.
That's what she told me.
It might be worth it just to see. I really want to get Mom on the internet. Now, she's going to need to have an internet access, right?
Right.
So that's an additional cost. They don't provide it. She has to.
Right.
It does look like, you know, here's my issue. First of all, you're completely dependent on First Street, the makers of this computer, for everything. If they decide, well, you know, just as Microsoft did with the web TV, well, we don't want to do it anymore, you're out of luck. That's it. It's over. I think that you'd probably be better off, and I would look at something called a Chromebox. I'm going to talk about what that is, and maybe you can do this with her when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We were talking with Terry. It's Mother's Day. Her 86-year-old mom can't use an iPad because she's arthritic. It's hard for her to do the touch. And mom found this thing called the Wow computer. And actually, Terry, I've been reading up on it, and maybe it's not so bad. It is pricey. I'll grant you that.
It is. Yeah, it's pricey. But
a good computer, and you know, they had to do some interesting things to make this reasonable. It comes from First Street. I'm not sure if it's First Street doing the support or just selling it. I'm not sure. It looks like it's First Street that does all the service and stuff. So you'd want them to stick around because you're relying on mm-hmm. them. It's based mm-hmm. on Linux. I was wrong. It's not Windows after I've looked into it, which is good. That means it won't be prey to the viruses and the dangerous stuff that Windows is prey to. Linux is secure. It comes with Skype, which is the choice I would make for video calls. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's so expensive, I think a 30-day trial is probably a great idea. I don't know anybody who's used this. I'm actually tempted to order one just so we can review it and see if it's as good as it. But on paper, it looks like it's a good solution. It's a very high-resolution display. They didn't cheap out on the display. It's only 21 inches, but that's twice mm-hmm. as big as the iPad was. And you can zoom in easily. So mom's going to have, I think, an easier time using it. Touch-focused. Okay. It does have a keyboard, but mostly, you know, she'll be using touch, but must just to punch buttons, you know, just to tap a button.
Sure.
So it's not going to be as
touch-specific.
I think it might not be a bad idea for mom to take a look at. Now, there are other choices, and I'm going to put in the show notes an article from Huffington Post by Jim T. Miller. He's a contributor to the Today Show, and he created a site called Savvy Senior. He's uh-huh. got a list of computers designed for seniors, and there's some others. So it might be worth comparing the others either at his website, SavvySenior.org, or going onto this link, and I'll put that at techguylabs.com, our show notes.
Okay, I'll take link. A look.
Yeah, but okay. but just on the top, off the top of, you know, just looking through it after I gave it a little more consideration, the Wow isn't just the end of the world. And the I mean, it seems like there's some good ideas there. It's certainly fast enough for mom. You know, the truth is, it's a $400 or less computer hardware wise. It's not an expensive computer, but does come with a camera, microphone, speakers, a CD player, a DVD player. It's got a good screen. They didn't cheap out on the screen. And where you're paying for is two things. One, they've completely customized it. So it's, you know, a completely straightforward user experience. She can't add stuff, but that's good too because she can't get in trouble. Basically, it does what it does. And probably that's fine for your mom. It's got email, a browser, Skype, so she can call you, see the grandkids. And then it's got support, and that's also very expensive. They only give you support for a few months for free, but then it's only $10 a month. That's lower than typical. So, you know, my suspicion is a lot of this costs. I mean, think about it. They're selling this computer to people who are, in many cases, going to go, I don't know what to do. So a lot of the cost really is support. You know, one thing they have that you might like, they have a trusted friend system that allows you to log into her system and show her how to do stuff or help her.
Okay.
That's kind of cool, too, especially if you don't live next door to mom.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not convinced it's horrific. I think it might even be worth $1,079, which is what they're charging.
$1,079? Okay.
Yeah. So it might be worth letting mom have it for 30 days. You're going to have to be on top of it. Otherwise, she's, you know.
The time flies.
Yeah, right. Time flies. Give her 3 weeks, and they say, Mom, send it back.
Right.
But
okay.
It might be, looking at it, it might be the thing for her. Look at SavvySenior.org for some other recommendations. Jim's good, and I think he'll have
I'll
some good recommendations there as well. Hey, I think you're a great daughter. That's a, I mean, she's, you're right. You want to get her online.
Yeah. She,
you know what's another good thing, and my mom loves, is audiobooks. Uh-huh. Audiobooks. Fantastic.
Okay.
Mom has a hard time reading, but she'll listen to it. She'll knit and listen to an audiobook all day.
Okay.
Yeah, those are great for seniors who can't see quite as well as they used to.
She's an avid reader. So
oh, good. All right.
She's still reading the newspaper.
Good for her. Another thing she might like is a Kindle. Because then she, you know, mom really liked that because she could make the print larger and it made it easier for her to read. So, this is a challenge. I don't think there are a lot of good choices out there, but here's the good news. As we baby boomers age, it's going to be a pretty brisk market for us.
Okay.
Thanks, Terry. Happy
Thank
Mother's
you
Day.
So much.
You're a great daughter. I think that's a wonderful thing to do. And it's a lot to take on, I understand, because you will be her support. And you've tried already. So the other choice that I was thinking of, but this would require more work on your part, is a Chrome box, not a Chromebook, which is a lap, those little laptops. But Google also sells a Chrome box, which looks like a Mac Mini. It's just a small little computer. Not expensive. Actually, Asus makes them. Samsung makes them. They're under $200. They're not expensive. And you can attach a nice monitor to that and a keyboard to that. She can't get in trouble with it. It's basically the Chrome browser. It's secure. She can do email. She can do video conferencing using Google Hangouts. And she can do surfing. So it's inexpensive. It's simple. It can come with a keyboard. You can choose a keyboard that's easy for her to operate. But this isn't quite as turnkey, is it? You're going to have to put more energy into it. I think the Chromebooks are a good choice for a lot of people, not just seniors. I think a lot of people have more computer than they need. 8888 Ask Leo, wrapping it up for the show this weekend. Got a few more minutes. Bobby in Cleveland, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello there.
Hey, Bobby.
I'm glad that I finally got my brain going to be on Saturday to listen to you since they took you off XM. That was real frustrating for me.
Yeah, we lost our carriage. All of Clear Channel did because XM said, "Now we're going to pull the plug on America's Talking."
I know. It was all my things to learn, all my shows that I was learning.
It's frustrating. Yeah, it's
anyway,
frustrating.
I drive truck, and I have a GPS. But sometimes I just like, I'm not real sure. I've done it for 25 years without a GPS, so I've done it a long time. But sometimes I don't like it, so I go to Google Maps and put in the origination and destination, and then it gives choices. And I've always been able to grab hold of the line and move it to a different area just to say, well, if I was to take this road.
Oh, interesting. I never used that feature.
Really? Really?
Apparently, well, that's why they took it out.
All of a sudden, now, it still says drag. I mean, it has a little thing that says drag,
yeah.
But I'm not able to make it work. It just totally flies off to some other area.
What device are you using?
I have a MacBook Pro, and I use Safari.
So you're on a laptop, so you're dragging it with a mouse. Is that right?
Yeah, well, the little area.
Trackpad, yeah. I generically call it a mouse, but you're absolutely right. There is no mouse. So let me just, I didn't even know it did this. So I can enter directions. I'm going to go from work to, let's say, Coit Tower in San Francisco. And let me get directions here. Now, you do have a written route options, which you can mess with. But you're saying, and are you using the nav, or are you just using the list of the listed route?
Well, it's just that I'm going by car, you know, because it doesn't have a truck on there.
Right, yeah.
And so then it'll just draw a line.
Oh, yeah. I never noticed that. I can do that. It's working fine. I can say, hey, I want to go here. I want to go there. And it'll adjust the directions. It'll even add little stop-offs. Yours is not doing that anymore, huh?
Well,
let me play with it and see. Hold on. We've got to take a break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're solving a mystery. Bobby is a truck driver in Cleveland. She says she uses Google Maps and her MacBook Air. Used to be able to drag. I didn't even know you could do this, Bobby, so thank you for the tip. When you get directions, drag the route around, and you can. Now, I've tried it on my Mac with the latest version of Google Maps on Firefox, Chrome, and Safari, and in all three cases, it's worked.
Yeah, I was hearing you do that, and I stopped at a plaza here, and I was trying it, and I've got the MacBook Pro is what I have.
Yeah,
and
what happens?
But it just, it will just, all of a sudden, the map will go small, and it'll take another place.
So I know what's going on now. This is a trackpad problem, and I have it sometimes too. Problem with trackpads is you have gestures, like pinch and zoom, and you can accidentally do a gesture. So what I'm guessing is that you're hitting a part of the trackpad or you're using multiple fingers in such a way that it's confused the trackpad. Now, I'm doing it with a mouse, and it works just fine. But a trackpad, you know, if you pinch and zoom, will pinch and zoom the map. And that...
Yeah, because I've sometimes had some problems where I do Lumosity, and you got to do things really quick.
Yeah.
And sometimes all of a sudden there'll be a screen that'll show up. It'll, you know, for me to make choices. I'm like, why is it
show up. Trying to
it's so frustrating. For a long time, I had a problem where I was using web pages and they would just go giant or small on me. And I finally realized there was a gesture turned on in the trackpad settings that would zoom it, and it made me crazy. So I turned it off. So that's okay. One thing you could do is go to your trackpad settings and look at some of those gestures. Some, if you never use them, disable them.
Okay.
So a two-finger drag, for instance, and I bet you this is what's happening. If you drag with two fingers, it'll zoom. So turn that off.
I mean, I've been using this for months, you know, without a problem.
It could also be, and since it just started and it's not always done that, it could also be the trackpad itself has an issue. You know.
My MacBook Pro is now about a year old, and I've had some other things where all of a sudden my little pointer will just disappear.
Yeah.
It absolutely just disappears. Yeah. I have to turn the computer off to get it to come back up again.
That's not good. Yeah, next time you're near an Apple store, I would bring it in, make an appointment with a genius and bring it in, and have them check the trackpad. They do wear out. If there's debris or something or moisture entrapped under it, it can confuse it because it uses moisture to determine that that's your finger. So it's easy for a trackpad to get confused. In the old days, and I don't recommend this, but we used to recommend taking an end of a ballpoint pen, not the drawing end, but the other end, and kind of going over the trackpad. We don't recommend this anymore, but sometimes there were little static issues and so forth. So I think it could be that the trackpad has an issue. I would try going into the control panel and messing with the gestures. Turn off the ones you don't use because they're just going to get in your way.
Right. Okay. All right. Excellent. Well, that gives me somewhere to go.
Somewhere to go anyway. Yeah.
You know, at least because I was like, what? You know, just all of a sudden just going crazy. So.
Yeah. That's the problem with trackpads. Especially nowadays, they've built in so many gestures. You know, three fingers does this, four fingers does that. And it's very easy to inadvertently issue a gesture, which makes you want to issue another gesture. So don't. Yeah. Okay, Bobby. Nice to talk to you.
Well, okay. Thank you.
All right. Take care. And thank you because you just showed me a cool tip. I had no idea you could do that with Google Maps. So it gives you a route and you say, no, I don't want to go over that bridge. What about that bridge? You just drag it over there. And it goes, okay. You really want to drive an extra 4 hours? It's really cool. And the new Google Maps, I'm looking at it now, also shows you traffic. It colors the route. And where there's bad traffic, it'll put red stretches or yellow stretches. That is nice. I have to say, I agree. I agree with Bobby. The GPS market's dead. Who needs a GPS? Your phone's got Google Maps. You get turn by turn direct everything. Jesse in Lancaster, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jesse.
Hello, Leo.
Hello, Jesse.
Hey, I got a question. I have an iPhone 4S now, and it's getting old, tired, so on and so forth. I never upgraded to the 7.1 iOS.
Oh, because, you should.
Well, I don't know. A lot of people have been having issues with the older phones because of the processor. And
Is 7 running okay for you?
No, I haven't upgraded.
Oh, you haven't gone to 7.0?
No.
You're on 6. Oh, yeah. I think I understand that. If you had upgraded to 7, I would definitely go to 7.1. But if you have...
Yeah, so, you know, the older phone was developed for that software.
Yeah, which one did you say, 4S?
Yeah, the 4S.
Yeah, it's on the edge, isn't it?
Yeah, so, anyway, I'm going to be getting a new phone. I have an upgrade through my carrier. So what I want to do is I'm in a dilemma. I've been looking at the S5. I've been looking at the Xperia Z2. I've been looking at the HTC One M8. And, of course, the iPhone 5S.
Well, you know, we're in a wonderful time, aren't we? Those are all great phones.
I know.
And so you have a choice, I guess, is the important thing. So if you are willing to leave the Apple ecosystem, and sometimes people aren't because they've bought a lot of stuff, you know, but the truth is it's not going to be very expensive to replace those apps. It's maybe $50 at most. Most apps are free. are very inexpensive. So I wouldn't say that that's a shouldn't be a prohibitive cost. All your music will move over fine unless it's copy protected, but Apple now lets you remove copy protection, so that's fine. So the Apple ecosystem is less of an issue than it used to be. So let's say you are, apparently you are, willing to take a look at both iOS and Android. The iPhone 5S is a beautiful, is a work of beauty. It will be superseded this year by the 6. I should point that out. I guess you know that by now. Anybody who's been using an iPhone understands every year, there's a new one. I like the fingerprint reader. It does work well, and it's a good idea for security, I think. I wouldn't use it a lot, but, it, you know, it's nice that it's there, I guess. I don't miss it. I am not a fan of the Samsung phones. I feel that they load those up with junkware. Trial stuff, Samsung stuff, carrier stuff, and it's just, it's got too much stuff on it. Plus, I'm not a fan of the plastic construction. It feels a little cheesy. On the other hand, the Sony Xperia is a beautiful phone with excellent camera, the camera everybody's raving about. On the other hand, I'm not a fan either of the Sony customizations. Of those phones, I had the choice of all of them. In fact, I own all but the Xperia, which is just coming out now. Of all those phones, I own the M8. That's the one I use, the new HTC One. I think it's probably the most beautiful design. It's the only one with dual speakers on the front, which means its audio is surprisingly good from this phone. I love the screen. It's very crisp, although all of those phones you described have excellent screens. The size is a nice size. It's a 5-inch phone. You'll notice the difference right away moving from your iPhone. It also has a different kind of camera. I think the camera is very good. Probably of the phones you described, the iPhone still has the best camera, but maybe the Sony competing strongly. Samsung's good. I like the HTC camera because it's got some interesting features, but it's only 4 megapixels. That bothers some people. My choice was the M8. I would stay away from the Samsung. And I think you might like the iPhone 5S the best. It's your choice. That's the beauty of it. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.